Hi, this is Holly Chow, voice of Jubilee on X-Men 97, and you're listening to A Stark Contrast with Jeffrey and Di. Way cool.
Hello and welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities from Marvel Comics to their MCU counterparts. And we're your hosts, Jeffrey
and Di.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello.
Literally.
Hi.
So Jeffrey's in the middle of a sweep of traveling and is
just a little
not
bit.
Even done. You're not
no,
even done yet.
Not yet, but you know, we vibe it out.
There we go.
Grind it out.
There we go.
Yeah, as we're recording this morning, afternoon, I just flew back from New York.
New York!
In New York!
See, that could have been your song, but I think we've done that before.
But
random song.
Well, yeah, I'm just exhausted. I think I'm a little delirious, but you know.
As we vibe.
I drank coffee at 6 p.m. today.
Godspeed.
It was a cold brew too, so this will be fun.
This will be fun.
But knowing what my body has gone through the last couple of days, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to fall asleep.
So I don't know if you caught this. You know, we were just talking about how when we travel for work, you know, you tend to lose sight of stuff that's happening on social media. And so, Jeff, did you see the trailer for Venom Last Dance?
That I did.
What do you think?
I think it's gonna be one big fun ride. One last dance.
I guess so, right?
Dude, who doesn't want to see a Venom horse?
I mean, yeah. But they gave it away.
They need to drag people in.
I guess so. I mean, on Twitter, you know, I asked our audience like what they thought and see cutie tweet. I'm so sorry if I don't know what his username is. But he said, meh, kind of directionless, not really sure what's happening or why I should care to be.
I mean, fair. But also it's kind of like,
what is the Venom film?
What is Venom's I guess end goal, except carnage.
I know, right? Been there, done that. Well, yeah, so I guess we'll see. It is very interesting. It is good fun in its own right, but it is kind of like, what is their end game?
I mean, look, there's Kraven.
We have Kraven to look forward to. Ah, Sony, can't. In better news, we were discussing this too. Deadpool and Wolverine, they're just coming out. It's like, we're official go time. It's the last few weeks until the film officially here.
They've been promoing that thing. Oh my God.
It's going to smash some box office records.
I hope so.
And I just got the premium from the Deadpool's premium package and bonus. It's like a necklace. It's the necklace that we see on the poster. The teaser poster that came out not too long ago, and it's fantastic, and people didn't realize it was a real thing, and I'm like kind of elated.
Have you seen the game thing yet?
Like, no, I haven't seen it. Mm. I haven't seen it anywhere. I assume those are probably in high volume areas, so maybe it's somewhere in LA.
Somewhere
in New York. Yeah, but I'd love to see one of the Krang games. If anybody sees one, let us know, because yeah, I'm curious what's inside. I feel like it's one of these, I think. One of the necklaces. But still incredibly excited for the drop of that film. It's getting closer. It'll be even closer by our next episode. You know, we'll be weeks out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, that film does drop in the middle of Comic-Con. So, that's going to be interesting.
It's going to be insane.
The premiere is probably that week, if not the week before. So
probably that Tuesday.
Yeah.
Maybe Monday.
Embargo is probably going to be July 20th or something. And then the world will know what's happening. But in other news, congratulations to the cast and crew of X-Men 97 on their two TCA Award nominations for Outstanding New Program and Outstanding Achievement. I think they have a pretty good shot
of winning
both of those.
Yeah.
It would be absolutely amazing. I mean, like, if Marvel can win for I Am Groot, like, my good, like, come on.
Yeah, I agree.
They're going to, Groot is amazing, obviously, but it is just a 5-minute show.
Yeah, yeah, miniseries.
Yeah, it's a miniseries, you know, season is 25 minutes, so X-Men 97, oh, they're going to sweep. I can't wait. And can't wait for more nominations to be announced. Yeah, all that said, I guess we can go on into our episode for today. But a reminder, we're not experts and we don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. Woo. And so in this episode, following our X-Men trend, Jeff is shaking his head in the sort of method. But we're going to nerd out all about Jubilation Lee, a.k.a. Jubilee. So, created by Chris Claremont and Mark Silvestri, Jubilee's first appearance was Uncanny X-Men number 244, cover dated May 1989, and the title of the story is Ladies' Night.
This is Ladies' Night! Oh, what a night!
Yeah.
Is Mark Silvestri Alan Silvestri's
maybe
brother?
Could be.
Cousin?
I've never actually looked into that. That could be accurate, actually. So do you want to take a shot at the cover price?
1989?
So let's just quickly backtrack. In our last episode, all about Gambit.
Yes.
It came out in 1990.
Uh-huh. And it was 1990. And it was a buck even.
It was a buck even. So
1989? So top of the decade inflation?
Yeah.
So was it 95? That would be, that's like, that's two on the note. Oh, these prices, man. A buck, if a comic book is a buck in 1990, mm-hmm. Jubilation came out in
May 1989. And so Gambit's was about less than a year, I think.
Did they just keep it at that one? Going into the top of the start of the decade of the 90s, mm-hmm. Ugh, my gut says one, but I also want to say 95.
Final answer?
Let's say a one.
Jeff, one.
It's one?
It's one.
Yes.
Woo.
Finally.
So, yeah. So, a solid dollar would get you this issue of the Uncanny X-Men, and as you can see,
that's so cool.
She is not on the cover. Jubilee is not on the cover in this book, but who is our Psylocke? This is the original.
Okay.
This
is before, like, who is that?
Before she turns into a ninja. So this is English Elizabeth Braddock.
Okay.
Psylocke, and then Rogue, Storm, and Dazzler.
Nice.
Dazzler.
You mean Taylor Swift.
I know. If they don't do it, man, lost opportunity. I know, that'd be amazing. But yeah, Dazzler was, you know, these were the core ladies when it came to Uncanny X-Men. This is after the events of Dark Phoenix, the Phoenix Saga, Inferno. It's after all of that. And so this is what the team was looking like, at least when the ladies were concerned. And so on the short box, you could get a CGC 9.8 of this book for $275. And then you could get a CGC 9.6, a gold signature series signed by Chris Claremont and Mark Silvestri. It's available for the same price. So I don't know what's happening there, I guess. So one without signature is the same price as one with, but the higher grade.
Mm.
Good deal either way. And then on eBay, you could get a CGC 9.8. Same signature series, also signed by Chris and Mark, but for $1,400.
Well, that's interesting.
7 times as much as the other one.
That is a lot.
People on eBay are kind of wild.
They're just like, let's just set it.
Yeah.
You know, see where it goes.
See what happens.
Yeah, let's see who's down.
Yeah, seriously. And then the lowest grade of this book I found was a CGC 5.5 for $110 on Shortbox, 7.5 for $45 on eBay. And then, just for comparison, an 8.5 sold for $20 last month on eBay.
Oh.
So if you just wait out an auction, you might get a really good buy. Because the fair market value for this book, which again is Jubilee's first appearance, is $160 to $200. So the fact that somebody got an 8.5 for $20...
That's crazy.
Kind of incredible. And then, of course, if you just want a raw copy of the issue, no grading, you could get it anywhere for about $30 to $100. Yeah, just get it done if you love this character. So before I ask your, you know, the first exposure to this character, we got a comment from Instagram follower Ronan Unchained, who just simply says glorious when it comes to Jubilee. So I guess he loves her, and who wouldn't, really?
Hell yeah.
So first exposure to this character, Jeff.
I'm trying to think about it, and I'm like, I mean, there's probably mentions of like previous like X-Men movies.
Sure.
But never like really clicked, or never really
interesting.
I never probably like processed. Paid attention or processed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So technically.
Yeah.
Technically, I think it was when I started watching X-Men, the original series.
Yeah.
I watched like the first two episodes, and she's obviously the first person you meet.
Forefront,
And the pilot. So, and I was like, oh,
yep.
Cool. And that's probably funny enough. Yeah. That was probably like the first, I was like, oh, this is Jubilee.
Yeah. Me, it was definitely, I want to say 92. Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not only because the show, but because, like, you know, as we've probably mentioned or even talked about in passing, when 92 was at its, you know, was like debuting and such, they had this gigantic Pizza Hut promotion. Mm-hmm. And so my dad would take me every week or whatever it was that they had a new wave of like, 1 week you get the Gambit and Rogue set.
Yeah.
Week two, you got Wolverine and Jubilee. And then week three, it was Jean and Cyclops. And so every week he would take me to go get this thing. And so it came with not only like this really cool, like, again, it's all branded in X-Men, this pizza box, like the personal pan pizzas, it had the X-Men on it, and you got an X-Men cup, and you got an X-Men comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was the second one, the first or second one, was, in fact, Wolverine and Jubilee. So I remember reading about her in there, and it probably was my first Jubilee comic. And of course, in the show, so Allison Court was more or less my introduction to the character. And then I have, you know, I have multitudes of cards of her, but for our bio, we're going to look at the mini book.
Let her rip.
Let her rip. So, the orphan daughter of wealthy Chinese immigrants, Jubilation Lee's mutant powers manifested at a Hollywood mall where she befriended and became a member of the X-Men, later traveling with teammate Wolverine throughout Asia as she mastered her energy manipulating abilities.
Oh.
Yeah, very straightforward. And then for your enjoyment, Jeff, Jubilee is 5'5" and 115 pounds. Sounds about right.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this Jubilee, she hails from here. She's from Beverly Hills, Los Angeles, California.
Wow. All right.
California girl. Yeah. And then, I guess we can go ahead and roll right into it. So, again, as to be expected of her as an LA native and such, Jubilee's origin story takes place on the ground floor of the multi-level Beverly Hills Mall that she's in. And so I'm assuming that this is the Beverly Center in hindsight. You know what I mean? I don't know how long ago the Beverly Center, I should have looked it up. But 1989, I'm like,
I don't even know if I've been inside the Beverly Center.
Oh, I've only been inside like once. I think once or twice.
I can't even. Yeah, it's in the middle of the city. And it's a horrible place to like the parking. And
Oh, okay. So a quick Google search. The Beverly Center was indeed open already because it opened on February 4th, 1982. So in the beginning of this issue, it quite literally opens with a wide view and it has the ladies' night title and all the credits for the comic. And it's this group of police officers overlooking this spectacle happening on the ground floor. So it is indeed Jubilee, and she's showing off to this crowd of people. So here's the first real page. And so she's immediately introduced the moment you open the book. And so, yeah, she's
Displaying fireworks
for this crowd of people. Yeah, she's like, pew, pew, pew. And so, you know, one cop in particular is very gung-ho about like, oh, she's a mutant, we got to go arrest her. And the other guys are like, man, she's a kid. Like, it's hurting anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is where the entire discourse of mutants versus...
racism!
Versus Homo sapiens takes place, right? Like, this is the whole, the whole thing.
That person's different. Arrest them.
Yes! Exactly. Sad but true. And so... The one cop unapologetically calls her a mutie, which of course, as we've learned, is a...
That sounds derogatory.
It's horrendously derogatory. When
what up, mutie?
Yeah, it's so bad. And so, you know, for the most part, the entire issue in a whole is very fun. It's very lighthearted. And it's like a Benny Hill situation where she's literally running through the mall trying to get away from these guys, because she too, not only is she at this point 14, 15, but she's also like, what's your damage? Like, what's happening? You know, like trying to just live her life in this mall. And people are also advocating for her to do that. You know what I mean? Mm. They're cheering her on. Yeah, and they're get away from them. And they try to interfere and stop them from assaulting and arresting her. Because why? She's just a mutant, right?
Yeah.
And so they decide to, you know, to take it upon themselves, like, oh, we need some professional help. So we're going to... There's this flyer for a group called the M Squad. And so they're mutant hunters who basically look like a pack of sad sack Ghostbusters. And so they're like, we're going to call in this M Squad to come get her. And so, of course, coincidentally, they're interfered by the presence and entrance of the four ex-women that we just mentioned. Mm. And so Psylocke, Rogue, Storm, and Dazzler, they're in the thicket of it. The X-Men are off in Australia at this point. They're not in New York. They have a second base. And so they've turned this other base into like a place that they go to when they're not in Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a safe house of sorts. And so they're all lamenting. They're like, oh, it's so boring here. I wish I could do something. I don't want to fight anymore. Saving the world is hard.
Typical teenager stuff.
Yeah. And so Dazzler's like, we should go take a night off. Let's go enjoy ourselves. And of course, Storm's like, yeah. And they go have a ladies' night. And so Dazzler's like, let's go to this mall. It's got a club. There's a bar. I was like, what kind of mall is she going to?
I know.
But there's a club. There's a bar. Sounds fun. Movies, shopping. Yeah. So they're doing the whole nine. And so, of course, that this happens to be the same mall that Jubilee is having her incident at. And so, once the M Squad shows up, they try to take on Jubilee. They start to scrap. And of course, despite their enjoyment. So it's kind of cute because you kind of get the idea that Jubilee has not been exposed to other mutants before.
Mm-hmm.
Because they make their entrance. They literally come out of air because it's a teleportation portal, right?
Mm-hmm.
They come through the portal and she's like, oh my God, did no one else see that? And it's like four beautiful women.
Yeah.
They clearly stand out. And she's like, oh my God, I think they're like me. But I don't look like them, but they look like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she's admiring these statuesque women. And so she follows them throughout the entire mall. First, they go try on outfits. They buy new clothes. They come out even prettier. They get like done up, and then they go to this club, which is funny because I'm pretty sure it's a strip club.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure it's a strip club.
Hey, women can go to strip clubs too.
At a mall?
Hey, maybe the 90s were something else, man. Right? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
So it's funny. It's such a great issue. Like, if you haven't read it, you got to read this. And so they're in this club and Dazzler slips somebody a 20 and is like, can you take care of my friend here?
Oh, it's definitely a strip club.
Yeah. See?
I don't know. It's definitely a strip club. Not that I know, but I'm just saying.
So you've heard.
I've heard that's how strip clubs work. Yeah, exactly. I've never been to one. Maybe. Right. I don't know.
She straight up slips the guy a 20 and it's like, can you make sure my friend is taken care of because she's a little stressed out lately. And so the guy comes out, he's only wearing a bow tie and slacks. He's kind of got a rat tail going on. I was like, Gambit? But he's not made his entrance yet. But I'm also like, Gambit?
Yeah.
He looks like Gambit. But anyway, it's not Gambit. But it's fun to imagine. And so he pulls Storm on stage. They start dancing. And then, of course, outside, this entire commotion, much like the one in our living room, is happening where the M-Squad is coming after Jubilee. And so the girls decide, you know what? We got to go take care of this and do what they do. They're X-Women. Of course they will. And so they come to Jubilee's aid. And then, unfortunately, all the bystanders that were once enjoying her fireworks get pulled into the crazy. So when all is said and done, they've saved the day. And Jubilee, they lose sight of her. They're like, okay, she was safe last time we saw her, but she'd like straight up disappeared.
Yes.
She ran off. And so they decide, okay, well, we've had enough fun for today. Let's go back to Australia. They go into the portal, but the portal remains open for a little longer after they've all gone through.
Uh-huh.
And so Jubilee is like, do I just do it? Let me just, okay. And she jumps through the portal after them, not knowing where the heck she's going.
Screw it, let's go.
Yeah. And so it's ultimately because she feels like it's guiding her to a place that she might feel like she belongs for in her life. So it isn't until Uncanny X-Men 248 that anyone even realizes she's sneaking around the mansion. So she's been there for 4 issues.
Oh my gosh.
Which is funny because I think at this time they were publishing 2 times a month. So it was 2 months, but it's still 4 issues worth. And so even then, none of the X-Men realized it was her. It was Nanny, that robotic egg thing that we talked about in the Gambit episode.
Yes.
Where she's like, the children must be mine. I must take care of them. So Nanny...
The children.
So Nanny is the only one who realizes that she's there. And they get in a tussle. This is before a huge story arc that, again, we talked about in our Gambit episode, because he comes in at the tail end of that.
Yeah.
And so... aside that, Jubilee actually goes quite a very long time before she actually joins the X-Men. She doesn't actually become a member until after the fact. We'll talk about this a little more, but she, like, you know, mentioned, you know, as it mentioned in the book, the little mini book, she goes and travels Asia with Logan. And it isn't until after all of that and they come back that she's like initiated into the X-Men. So X-Men series 2 with Chris Claremont and Jim Lee is kind of like her first entry into the team. And she's just there. She's like, okay, Wolverine brought a friend. Cool. And she joins the X-Men. And then I made before we moved on, I made a notation that as for her name, Jubilation Lee, it's quite a stretch to make her moniker work. But when it comes together, of course, it's best said by Jubilee herself. She says in this first issue, she says, "My name's Jubilee, because with me, every day is a celebration."
Wow.
She's just like, oh, shucks, kid.
Wow.
So cute.
What positivity.
It was such beaming positivity. And so Jubilation Lee, Jubilee, portrayed by Katrina Fleurice in 2000's X-Men, and then Kia Wong in X2 and X3, and most recently, Lana Condor in 2016 X-Men Apocalypse. I have to give a special shout out to Holy Cow, Holly Chow, the voice. That's her handle on everything.
I mean, yeah.
I love it.
I mean, yeah.
Who, of course, voices Jubilee in X-Men 97. So when it comes to this character in pop culture, live action and such, we've never really gotten a proper origin story for her.
Yeah.
Like, ever. Like, do you even remember? Because, you know, speaking of you trying to think back into even recollecting where you've seen her before, do you even remember which film you would even see her in?
I scrolled down to the
pictures, yeah.
And I was like, oh, no.
What's the earliest remember? Like, do you even have any recollection?
At most, Lana Condor.
Which is... the most,
recent, but I'm also like,
it's hard to remember.
Yeah.
Wait, did you see?
Yeah, I watched.
Oh, yeah,
I watched it.
So she
watched it.
Yeah, but then she didn't end up coming back for Phoenix, which is like, oh.
Yeah, all I remember is just Jennifer
Lawrence
dying.
I know. I mean, yeah, right?
That's all I really could remember for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind
of Olivia Munn.
Yeah, and Olivia Munn.
But even she got minimal screen time.
Exactly right. She got a lot more than I expected, but still not enough for what I liked, especially because I love that character. But yeah, you know, we haven't seen a proper origin story for her. And so her earliest proper on-screen introduction, ironically, was that of X-Men the Animated Series. Mm. Like, that's the only place that we've really gotten an idea of who this character is. And it is very, very accurate, as you could, you know, as you saw, not only in Night of the Sentinels, but also with this comic book page that we're just looking at. And so there are sadly, as a result, isn't that much to actually discuss when it comes to this character and her origin. She does say in both animated series, ironically enough, again, like compared to live action, the animated series, both 92 and 97, she doesn't get to talk that much about who she is, like her family life, all of that. Like, we don't, like, you know, in 97, for instance, we meet Roberto's parent.
Yes.
And we do get the sense that, oh, his mother does not necessarily accept him as a mutant, but also doesn't care, but cares enough that she doesn't want him tainting their name. And so already we've gotten, like, kind of a fuller breath of that character's origin story, but still not Jubilee, which is still surprising because she obviously deserves more recognition when it comes to her background. And I'm hoping that they'll actually embellish on that the next season, because, yeah, we haven't really gotten it. She did have, I think her parents only made a brief appearance in the first episode or two, or is probably her adoptive parents.
Yeah.
But yeah, they don't really get into it.
Ever. No, yeah, I haven't. Nope.
Right. Yeah, and so I really hope that they do embellish on her more. But I, needless to say, in the animated series is where you also see the most of her personality, which is, you know, of course, very, she's a fan favorite by far. And yeah, she's an incredible character. But we'll talk a little bit more about her as we go along here. So yeah, looking at the the Brady Bunch graphic of Jubilees that I found online. And it does show four animated representations versus the five on screen, four on screen, because one is concept art. So first up we had, X-Men, the animated series, followed by the Spider-Man series, because the X-Men did do a quick crossover where she was voiced in those two by Allison Court, the original voice actress. And then there's Generation X. And so this is what I told you to watch if you had a minute.
Oh.
And so we're going to talk about Generation X at the tail end of this episode.
Looks like a 90s like sitcom, rom-com.
Yeah. So it's quite amazing in its own right, because Jeff, that TV pilot came out in 1996.
Oh my gosh.
And it predates every other X-Men thing we've seen in live action. So Generation X is technically the first live action X-Men movie there ever was.
Oh.
And so again, yeah, we'll talk about it later, but and then there was the X-Men Evolution version, there was X-Men X2. And then there was concept art, Days of Future Past, but she did not make it into the film.
I was going to say, is that Jamie Chung?
That is Jamie Chung. They used her for conceptual purposes. And so it's presumed that maybe she had auditioned and got the role, but they decided to scrap the role. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, we then see Jubilee in X-Men Apocalypse. And then everyone's, I would say, like, probably my favorite version of her is indeed X-Men 97, just because she's a little more mature, she's established, and her screen time is just so fantastic. What was that line again? The Big Mac one.
Oh.
Yeah, we were so good at it in the other episode. Oh. We said it in our mini Marvel not too long ago.
Like, the Big Mac?
What which she said, like, listen here, small fry, I'm the Big Mac now.
Yes. Yes.
So great. Ah.
Now she was. So good. Now yeah, and I like yeah, she. I like spicy. Her. I liked her story arc with Roberto. So that was nice. It was really good. I enjoyed learning about her too.
Yeah, through her actions and such. But yeah, like I really can't wait for them to actually get into it. So, you know, the audience can't see this, but maybe I'll remember to actually post it. But across the board, you know, as in terms of looking at her aesthetic, yeah, Jubilee is a striking representation of what 90s look like. So it was very, initially, she was so hyper-colored and neon, and you kind of like, I know that you aren't necessarily a full-on 90s kid, but like puffy paint and, yeah, like a yellow trench coat with pink t-shirt and, you know, great. It was great
I like
stuff.
Her glasses.
Her glasses are dope.
They are cool.
Like but yeah, so... You know, Jubilee had a look representation representing an entire generation of mall rats. I did not dress like that, but I definitely saw people who dressed like that for sure. And of course, they carried the characteristics, you know, into live action, adopting some version of a yellow jacket. Like even in X2, like in this screenshot that I have on here. Jeff,
yeah.
It's still yellow. It's just that it was supposed to be like roughed up and weathered, but her jacket is yellow, and so they've done a nod to the yellow in one way or another.
Who's the one in the middle?
That is that's Kia. No, that's Katrina Florice.
From here, it looks like Zendaya at a quick glance.
What?
I swear.
I can see that.
If you just go bop, you're like, what? Sure. Zendaya was in that.
Yeah. And so, they've carried over nuances of the character's like overall composite, you know, either in her hairstyle, the earrings, fanny pack, or a little bit of everything, depending on the film. And Lana Condor's version is a perfect example of that. Like they pulled in pink glasses with hoop earrings and then a yellow jacket.
Yeah.
So of the nine versions of this character we have seen, only two of them have actually been Chinese. Kia Wong, and then Holly Chow, and only one of them has been Chinese on screen. So it's kind of like, all right, y'all. when you do this next,
better do it right.
Yes, please do it right. So from there, we'll move on to powers and paraphernalia. So Jubilee herself, I think it's in this issue, on the second page of her first appearance. She calls her power articulate, quasi-animate, transistory plasmoids, pieces of raw energy.
All right. Quasi-animate. I don't even know what quasi means.
Quasi. So it's not quite. It's like not a girl, not yet a woman.
I'm not a girl, not yet a woman.
Right. So it's quasi-animate. So that's why they kind of landed on fireworks.
Okay.
Because they're like animated, but they're not necessarily harmful explosions.
Okay.
Necessarily.
Fair.
Quasi. Sort of. So so while she possesses this power, by all technicalities, it is referred to as lumikinetic explosive light blasting, expelling energy plasmoids, globules that vary in power and intensity, something akin to fireworks, as well as atomic blasts and psionic shields. And so it's very interesting because, again, very surface level. She has fireworks. Pew, 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 pew. But, again, as we've seen Next 97, she can blast people's faces off. She can destruct things.
Blind people.
If she really, really wants to. And she has built up her power since the olden days. So much so that even Emma Frost, the White Queen herself, noted in one of these books that Jubilee had the potential to detonate at a subatomic level, meaning she can control the very existence of particles, both newly created and existing. So she's incredibly scientific. So again, it's like if you look at it from a very surface level, someone like Dazzler, for instance, can create light out of sound.
Yes.
But given enough concentration and density of the sound and the light conversion and all that, it can be weaponized. So that's kind of what Jubilee is doing as well. She has literally, again, potential to detonate at a subatomic level. It sounds
so she wants to be dangerous. She can be dangerous.
Exactly right. And she has done something to that degree where she has detonated. She has created such an explosion.
Yeah.
She burned her own hair off.
Oh my gosh.
And she was just like without eyebrows for a while. But straight up like self-detonating is kind of insane.
Yeah.
And so as for the psionic shields, This might be thanks to her chemically based powers. And so that allows her to be a bit of a challenge when it comes to mental manipulation. So telepaths can't necessarily focus on her. So whereas they could maybe get a victim or whatever quite quickly, in Jubilee's case, it might be a little more challenging because of just sheerly based on the chemical reactions of her brain.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So she has her own little shield, protective shield of sorts. And so when it comes to the live action version, it's more or less the same, though we don't really see it at all. As it is, there only seems to be two or three recorded instances in the films where we even get a whiff of her powers. When it comes to the Foxverse, Lana Condor's is probably the most accurate because when I watched a YouTube clip and it's like all powers, Jubilee, X-Men movies, and the clip is literally 29 seconds long. I was like, oh, and that's including
everything
bumper.
Else. Yeah, 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 yeah.
So it's probably 15 seconds, but in, I think it's X2 or X3, she just has static developing in her hands.
And that's it.
And that's it. And I was like, what the?
They didn't want to put the budget all on.
Right.
That's like, pretty much what it is.
They couldn't even do like practical like lighting. You know what I mean? Like nothing. Nah. So
if it ain't Wolverine.
Right. Oh, the times are changing. So we might see something yet. But yeah, Lana Condor's. In Apocalypse, it's when the kids are at the mall in the arcade, and I think it's Cyclops and Jean are playing the game, and Cyclops loses, and he's like, oh, I don't have any more quarters or something. She's like, I got it. And she like uses her fireworks on the coin dispenser, and it just turns the game back.
Yep.
Bizarre. I don't know how that worked, but...
Magic.
Most accurate depiction, because it went pew, 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 and it showed fireworks, so that's it. I mean, that's... You know, that's sadly, again, that's all we got. So as for friends, family, and affiliations, or family, friends, and affiliations, honorable mentions for all the teams she's been on. Because, again, we're not going to go through each and every X-Man and every connection she's ever made. But I did want to give a special shout out to the X-Men themselves, Generation X, as well as the Exterminators. And so we unfortunately don't get the privilege of seeing any of these in live action aside Generation X, because again, even in Apocalypse, she's only with them at the mall.
Yep.
She's never with them in battle ever. And yeah, so, but we'll talk about Generation X much later.
Let me say Generation X. I think of the wrestlers, because there's a wrestling group.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, yeah. D-Generation X.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm pretty sure there was a team called Degeneration X, or a storyline
in
X-Men. Yeah. Wow. Okay, what are the odds, right? So for family, there's John and Xinyi Li, her mother and father. So these two, although the character first made her debut in 1989, the story of the Lees isn't explored until Generation X Annual in 1999, a full 10 years after her debut. So the issue, it's basically filling in the gaps, because again, we have not seen anything from the story. So the entire issue's goal is to kind of orient, like, okay, where did this character come from? Why was she in foster care? Why was she just kind of orphaned and brought to the X-Men? There's nothing in between. She's always just been an X-Man. So the issue itself opens to Jubilee recollecting her parents' death date, which happens to be October 15th. And so aside the blatant fact that they lived in Beverly Hills, you kind of get the idea that they were incredibly prosperous. They were probably very well off. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it seems that her dad was a president of a bank, and they had huge accounts under their care. And so investments, properties, what have you. And so she never quite knew what really happened to her parents, aside the fact that they got run off the road.
Mm-hmm.
Their car fell off a cliff. No idea why. No idea if there was foul play. And so she later, you know, she's going into it, you know, thinking, you know, maybe there's something here. And she later uncovers that a huge operation in which a man named Hunter Braun was laundering money through her dad's bank.
Mm.
So when her father found out, He threatened to go to the cops with the information, and the next day, he and Mrs. Lee met their fate. Coincidence?
I think not. Nothing's ever... people's people's deaths are never a...
Never a coincidence.
Random.
Yeah, it's no, never random. Random. It's yeah, never exactly. random. So unfortunately, after all is said and done, the next day after they meet their fate, the funds are extracted from the bank. Another coincidence?
I think not.
So... The issue goes on. She decides to get revenge. In the end, Jubilee brought Bron to justice, thankfully, with the help of Generation X, and she got some closure for herself, which is great because I think that's something that she always needed growing up. And so again, we have no live action counterpart for her parents. We barely see foster parents in the show, and so yeah, it's not much more than that, sadly. Next up on the list, James Howlett. Logan, Wolverine. I saved this section for last because I was like, oh God, how do I say very concisely, like, they're best friends.
Besties.
It's you know, and Jeff and I were just kind of, you know, like saying, like, Wolverine could probably be the longest episode we've ever done. Mm. And it could be two parts. Who knows? The character's so incredibly dense.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Jubilee, I mean, given there are 46 notations of Wolverine on Jubilee's wiki page alone, not including sources, you can probably guess that these two have a pretty strong connection. So I'm going to keep it light here. So before the lore of X-23, aka Laura, Jubilee was very much the daughter figure to Logan's father figure, and Jubilee herself coming to Logan's rescue many, 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 many times before.
Yeah.
Against not only former White King Donald Pierce, but also a group of criminal cyborgs called the Reavers, the Hand, and even the Mandarin. So he has gotten himself in this trouble, and this tiny kid has gotten him out, which is kind of amazing. Mind you, these two didn't even know each other, for the record, before the issue, I think it was Uncanny X-Men 251. Didn't even know, because she's still hiding.
Yeah.
She was still hiding in their Australia house. Stuff goes down outside, and Wolverine is in trouble. She gets him out, like, he is crucified.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah.
He's crucified on the X. Just like our friend Magneto.
Oh my gosh.
And he has stakes through his arms and everything. And he pulls himself off of that, but she helps him and get away. And so he's like, oh, you're done good, kid. You know, like, he doesn't even know who she is. She has no idea who he is, but they get along almost immediately. So, you know, even despite that being seven issues from her first appearance, like any true X-Men, Jubilee's innate want to help people connected her with Logan. And so from then on, they're good. He takes her around to Asia. They become best buds. It's like a Batman and Robin situation.
Like a dynamic duo, buddy cop.
Exactly right. And so she goes in on his solo title for a bit. And then, yeah, like I said earlier, she comes right back into X-Men. And then they're on the team together. And he protects her with his life. And so, of course, James Howlett, Logan, Wolverine, portrayed by Hugh Jackman in every single goddamn X-Men related film since 2000.
Yep.
No on-screen crossover.
Funny.
Feels sad.
No one knows who Jubilee is. Like during that, they're like, why would we wanna?
It's exactly right. Unfortunately, that's exactly right. Even with the cartoon, people are still kind of like, people would have been like, who's that? So it's a total shame. Unfortunately, also, you know, Rogue's role in the first film was originally written to be Jubilee, but then rewritten because of that reason. Because people wouldn't really associate. And also, it would have put her in such a position to be such an important character. And for whatever reason, Fox was like, nah, we're not going to do that. Which is just, again.
Yeah.
Shame.
Yeah.
Shame. And then last on this list, Shogo. Do you have any idea who Shogo is? Oh my God, Jeff.
I know a Shigo.
What?
From Kim Possible.
Oh, that's Shigo. Right. Shigo. Oh, everybody loves Shigo. She's the one with the green, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, that's funny. So Shogo, in 2013.
Yes.
Let's just say a meteor landed in Budapest.
Nice.
Budapest. And it left a path of destruction, some resulting in children being orphaned. A lot of people died.
My gosh.
Jubilee happened to be in Hungary at the time and decided, you know what? I'm going to adopt a baby boy.
Okay.
And she adopted the baby boy and she named him Shogo.
Wow.
So goes without saying, in modern ages, we are now being introduced into a more mature Jubilee.
Okay.
Where she's not 15 years old anymore. She's more of a 22, 23.
Okay.
And so, yeah, she's a mama now. And so Shogo himself has manifested his own lore since his introduction, even taking on the form of a dragon while on Otherworld with Excalibur. This was a Krakoan Age storyline,
mm-hmm.
where it was Betsy Braddock, Gambit, Rogue, Jubilee. I'm missing somebody and I don't remember who it is. It's going to frustrate me. But they're on a team together. And Shogo, it's basically every time you see Jubilee, she's got the baby thing.
Yeah.
She has him in the baby thing.
Yeah.
She's carrying him around.
My gosh.
And she's fighting and she's got him in. Yeah. It's kind of cute. It's kind of like, you know, the Hangover.
Oh.
It's very Hangover.
Yeah, yeah.
Just walking around with the baby thing on.
Whose baby is that?
Exactly. And so it gets a little dark because evidently Shogo was playing host to a sentient bacteria.
Mm.
Think about that. Sentient bacteria by the name of Archaea. And so, long story short, evidently Shogo's birth father was alive and well, although not exactly an upstanding guy. There's probably some presumed fake death going on, and he thought, well, I'll just collect my child later, which is what he tries to do.
Yeah.
And he basically promised to kill anyone who stood between he and his son. And so Jubilee takes on the challenge, and she kills his dad.
Okay.
Yeah, she killed
no,
his,
no
yeah.
big deal.
Yeah, no. So she's got a baby, and it's hers. It is officially hers. So Shogo Lee is the last one, as far as we'll talk about on family. So again, no live action counterpart. A lot of this is fodder for another day. Maybe we'll see it. God knows. Who knows? So next up on the list, Love and Trusts. So Jeff, again, I hope you do watch Generation X. I'm going to keep saying this to everybody. In fact, like, look it up on YouTube. It's there. I think you can buy it from Apple for like $5. It's not the greatest quality all around, but hopefully you can get a clear version. So when it comes to love interests for Jubilee, however, she does have a few under her belt, but they're all from Generation X.
Okay.
So there's you will not have a clue who any of these characters are, Jeff, but it's totally cool. First up, there's Angelo Espinosa, who is codenamed Skin.
Nice.
And so in a nutshell, Angelo, you know how Mr. Fantastic is?
Like he stretches?
Stretches.
Sure.
Like that, but a lot worse.
This sounds...
So he could like, you know... Yeah. I just made a pulling gesture on my cheek. Yeah, so he...
Ew.
His skin...
Ew.
There's parts in Generation X where he's being bullied and they pull like
his... Ew.
They pull his chest is what I was going to say. People at home don't know this. So yeah, that's his power and it sort of hurts him in its infantile stages.
Okay.
So where Mr. Fantastic's just like, whoa, my legs are long. Like Angela's like, oh, my leg. You know, like he
does. My leg?
Yeah. it's quite different for him. So anyway, while Gen X as a whole gets an honorable mention for Jubilee's closest friends and family, it's almost expected she end up dating some of her teammates. And Angela was one of them, at least when it came to the comic books. There's not much to actually embellish about, because mm-hmm. these two, you know, and a lot of what was suspected to happen happened off screen. So they casually mention it in passing, but you don't see any of it. But apparently they were fooling around with each other. So there's that. And then, yes, there is a live action version of this character portrayed by Agustin Rodriguez in the 1996 Generation X TV pilot. So I rewatched this yesterday. What is today? I guess I rewatched it yesterday or the night before.
Uh-huh.
And I remembered almost all of it.
My gosh.
I had not seen that film since it came out.
I was
almost 20 years.
2 years old. Like, pretty much.
Yeah. I popped in because it aired on my birthday. Fun okay. fact, it aired on my 14th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm old. And, and I recorded on VHS because I was like, oh, it's on my birthday, Generation X. And I liked the comic because there was a comic at that time. So I popped it in. I remember how I wrote it on the VHS tape and everything. And mm-hmm. so I had not seen this film since then. And so rewatching it, I was like, oh my God, I remember all of this.
Wow.
It's only an hour and a half, but...
Love that.
Memorable, I guess.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So yeah, I rewatched it, and I before I watched it, I couldn't recall them having anything super duper romantic, but they do have the usual teen strife mixed with new kid drama because they're both new to the team.
Drama.
Yeah, and they have their Angelo is very much a star of the film at least when it comes to the newbies. Like he and Jubilee kind of have contending roles in that film because they're both very important. And so yeah, not too much to talk about, but they did have sort of a crush there. Next up on the list is Everett Thomas, aka Sync. So he is another Gen X teammate. Everett was someone she had quite a lot of synergy with, but it was pretty messy, as they all are.
Of course.
And he was also interested in their teammate, Monet St. Croix. And it more or less ended there.
I've never seen a healthy relationship.
No. In general?
Oh, no, in X-Men.
Oh, in X-Men. No. It doesn't exist.
In general? Oh, my God. No. Yeah, everyone that I know is just in toxic relationships.
One way or another, right? Oh, God, what is that? That's the new norm, I guess, right?
I've seen it.
Yeah. I mean, the praise to anybody who can make it work, but my goodness.
But I've never seen a healthy relationship in X-Men.
No, it doesn't exist.
So like after watching, like, not to go back to X-Men 97, but yeah it's just like...
Oh, yeah. Mess.
Scott Summers is a mess.
and you only know this, you're like, oh, I can't wait to talk about Cyclops. Holy crap.
Like, he's a total mess.
So good.
Gene!
Scott! Oh, this is the new J. Jonah Jameson. It's
just Madam! Oh,
God. Yeah, it's all messy. They, again, it's kind of like... It's kind of like celebrity couples where they start dating somebody in a movie that they're with.
That's never healthy.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So Jubilee liked Everett. Everett liked Jubilee, but then Everett started to like Monet.
Mm-hmm.
And Monet is basically like Rogue, but without the power steel, but she's perfect. She's called the perfect mutant.
Is there a perfect mutant?
Well,
though?
She's stuck up and she's horrible. So
okay, well then that checks out.
Yeah, but so they have a lovely little triangle there. But yeah, again, no live action counterpart for Everett Thomas. They did not bring him into the film. God knows why. I think it was a budgetary issue. they had to cut people out, which is unfortunate. But yeah. And then last on this particular list, Jonathan Starsmore, a.k.a. Chamber. He's actually one of my favorite characters from the X-Men universe. So once again, another Gen X teammate. Jono was her most recent love interest, though he hasn't been spotted much in current continuity. He's kind of one of those characters that kind of has drifted on the wayside of being super duper relevant. But he is, however, often shown caring for both she and Shogo, and it's pretty adorable. Real quick about Jono, his power is that he has like psionic energy, but it ruptured.
Uh-huh.
So the entire, from his sternum to his nose,
yeah,
is completely blown off.
Ew.
So it's just power. It's just power.
Ah.
You can't even see, like, you can see him, but it's like there's just this flame that just... So what he does to contain it, he wraps himself or he wears a protective thing.
Got it.
So he's up to here and he's just like...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's great. He's a great character, though. He's I think he's Cockney.
That's always good.
Yeah, it's interesting to read panels with that in mind. But again, no live action counterpart. So as promised, as we talk a little bit more about Jubilee, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Gen X TV pilot. And so fun fact about it, the budget was simply too small to accommodate the cast and effects needed. So they had to wing it with some of the characters. And Chamber was replaced by a character named Refrax, who is... Do you remember Spike from Buffy?
Buffy? Oh my gosh.
He looks like Spike.
Okay.
But he has glasses on. Okay. And he's like a cheap version of Cyclops.
Of course.
That's Refrax.
That's hilarious.
And then a character named Husk from the comic books. She's the baby sister of Cannonball, if you know Cannonball at all. No, you don't know, huh?
Mm-mm.
New Mutants.
I did not grow up in the mutant era.
Yeah, dude.
So I don't.
New Mutants, 2020.
Demon Wise. He's in it.
The guy.
Oh, no? Okay.
The guy, the weird guy from Stranger Things, played him.
Mm.
I can't remember his name.
Ah.
He's the one that's dating the other girl in real life. Charlie. Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
So he plays Cannonball.
The British guy.
The British guy. That guy plays Cannonball, aka Samuel Guthrie.
Okay.
Who is the big brother of this character named Husk, Paige Guthrie. And so she was replaced by a character named Buff in the film because her power is that she can literally peel her skin off.
It's gross.
And it.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
It uncovers a stronger version of herself.
Mm.
Yeah. The way that they depicted it is like pretty gross because it's like she just imagine like tearing into tomatoes or something.
I don't like peeled tomatoes either. Yeah. I don't like that.
So yeah, that was her power.
I am looking at pics on IMDb of Generation X.
Oh my God. It's so good. But I will.
Are all these Dutch angles? What the?
Oh yeah, dude, it's riddled with just it. Yeah, it's a tilt-a whirl.
Oh my!
But let God. Me tell you, their version of Banshee and White Queen is outstanding. It puts everything that Foxverse has put out to utter shame. That White Queen, Finola Hughes, holy crap! Her wig isn't the greatest, but her performance. And her outfits are incredible.
Yeah, this is the definition of 90s.
So you have to remember, Jeff, really quickly, that film dropped in the era of Nick Fury, S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, and The Punisher.
Yeah.
Like the 90s versions of those films. So
why do you think it was so hard for comic like movies or shows to be respected or liked?
That's a great question.
In the 90s?
I don't,
you know, like what's the difference? I mean, I think there's like there's a bunch of different factors.
Sure.
One being CGI and visual effects. Obviously,
like why are they goofy? Why? Are they but like, goofy?
I guess what I'm trying to is like doing it. Then it's like it just got made fun of. It's like, what is this?
Right.
But then it's like
100%.
And then once 2000 came along, it was like, oh,
right,
okay.
Right.
It became more mainstream. Studio. Yeah.
It's interesting because like I want to say like New Line Cinema handled like The Punisher or something, right?
Yeah.
And that was with Dolph Lundgren. And it was dark and it was gritty, but it's not a fair comparison because The Punisher himself isn't looked upon as a comic book character, right?
Yeah.
It's very ground level. If you didn't know better, you would have no idea that was a comic book. But you look at something like Batman, right? And it was also, this is also past the Batman era.
That's true.
So DC and WB were really, really winning for a long time because they were able to elevate it to a studio level and get someone like Tim Burton.
And in live action.
In live action. Got it. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Whereas these other properties, at least with Marvel, it did feel like, oh, well, how do you take a teenager, a Chinese American teenager in a yellow trench coat who blasts fireworks? How do you translate that into a level that'll resonate as hard as a Batman played by Michael Keaton?
So technically then like DC kind of started the live action versions.
I wouldn't say start. I would say that they definitely pushed it to another level of
propelled
notoriety.
It forward.
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they definitely got the great head start. Superman.
Mm.
Superman is probably
Christopher Reeves.
Yeah. Like almost untouchable. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So I think that they, not to compare DC and Marvel, but Superman as an entity really, really did propel.
Yeah, because like my thing is
concept.
Like, why would they Like, what sparked there to be like, oh, let's make these superhero, these comics
right.
live action
well,
at
the
time.
I think it also goes as far back as Mad Max and Dune, right? There are these, like, they sort of have this kitschy thing.
Oh, these iterations
Dune.
Based on books, yeah.
Yeah, based on books. And so it's like, okay, they're leaning into Star Trek, into Star Wars. We're bringing this science fiction into life. What's the difference between science fiction and this kind of science fiction?
Mm.
They're exactly the same. They're just different scapes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But again, how do you bring a Chinese American in a yellow jacket?
How do you bring characters that are known to be incredibly vibrant on
sure.
paper?
Yeah.
You know, and very mm-hmm. comic-y remnant of the 60s, 70s,
right,
80s.
Right.
And then how do you bring that to live action without making it look campy and corny?
Right. So it is very interesting that they chose, and
the dialogue is corny sometimes too in the comics.
Oh, I can't wait for you to watch that freaking movie. but yeah, you know, it's interesting that you even say that because, again, a 1996 TV pilot film
yeah.
based on Marvel Comics that wasn't the Incredible Hulk, because you have to think of also, what did Marvel have out at that time, right? So in the 70s, 80s, they had that Lou Ferrigno Hulk show.
Yes, I remember that.
They had a Fantastic Four film.
Yes.
They had a Captain America TV show.
Yes.
Spider-Man.
Yes.
And those were all very...
Oh, the Spider-Man. Oh, yeah.
Goofy. Yeah, a little goofy.
The Japanese Spider-Man.
Oh, Sentai. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Spider-Man. Yeah, they had... That's what they had under their belt.
Yeah.
You know? So it's kind of... Again, it's really interesting. Okay, well, they took that approach. You had, like, Thor. You had Cap on a motorcycle with a shield. Is a far cry from the versions that we got, you know, in the 2000s and the aughts. So I think they took a huge gamble making a Generation X film just because, like, also, like, you between X-Men and Generation X, you went with Generation X?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's tough to even say, like, the who's and whys of it all. But if and when you watch it, it is very interesting because they kind of went for it. You're going to have to bleep me. She's Jubilee herself.
Uh-huh.
She calls somebody an ass. And she says fuck like 4 times.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
wait. But yet it's presented with these Dutch angles.
I know.
And
it's
a
so
bad
weird,
wig.
Man.
And it's the enemy is kitschy. And it's...
Is this Emma Frost? Fenola Hughes?
Fenola Hughes, yes.
Yeah. From afar, it looks like Jamie Lee Curtis.
But let me tell you, accent, wardrobe.
It's all pretty.
The walk. Always like January Jones could never.
Mm.
You know what I mean? They nailed the persona. And again, that Banshee.
This is so funny.
Like Banshee,
dude.
I believe the only depiction of Banshee in Foxverse was the one in First Class.
Oh, okay.
You know, but here in this film, he's...
Yeah, this looks hilarious.
It's so good. I love it.
Generation X comes to Fox in a live-action film.
Yeah, so they never quite...
They just look like a bunch of teens going to the mall.
But that's it, right?
I mean,
that's what they were trying to do. They were trying... It was almost like the Buffy, before Smallville, before all of that stuff. They were trying to catapult it, and it just did not work for them.
This is crazy.
You have to watch it. Oh my gosh. So yeah, again, you know, it's worth a watch. You gotta check it out. We're gonna talk about it a little more, actually, not too long from now, but very quickly we'll go into notable adversaries. And so, like with any major character, any enemy of the X-Men is likely an enemy of Jubilee's by proxy.
Yeah,
so we're just gonna talk about literally two of them in particular, one of which is Sebastian Gilberti, aka Bastion. So while Bastion does not have a live action counterpart, we do have the X-Men 97 version voiced by Theo James. So again, you know, as I mentioned with her powers, these two don't have a definitive hook when it comes to hero versus villain, but
yeah,
they went toe to toe.
They did.
And Jubes served him.
She did.
Like, that was straight up something out of Evangelion, which is like his face was ripped off. He was like, ah, his eyeball was hanging out, and all because that she went crazy on him with her powers. But they do have a little bit of a connection in the comics. And so during a small storyline called Operation Zero Tolerance. Does that sound familiar?
A little bit, yeah.
Bastion held Jubilee captive in an attempt to gain information on the X-Men. He basically tortured her. She wouldn't buckle.
Nice.
And so the X-Men come to rescue her, and you know they all get into it. And so she's ultimately saved by Wolverine, and you know that was pretty much it between them. But again, bigger battle involves everybody. It's not specifically just the two of them. But somebody that is very much directly linked to Jubilee is a character named Zaris. So during a story arc titled Curse of the Mutants, this is where things start to get weird. a vampire suicide bomber.
Oh my gosh.
A vampire suicide bomber. That's exactly what I said. Used a bioengineered virus to mass infect individuals. And so Jubilee, wrong place, wrong time. Once again, ladies' night, that was great.
Yeah.
Shogo, good deal. This one, definitely not one of her best moments because she was also infected by this virus.
Mm.
Over time, she was drawn into a mysterious force calling to her. And then all the while, you got to remember, this is where all the Marvel characters start to intersect.
Of course.
Blade.
Wow.
Yeah. Blade confirms that Dracula.
Of course.
Remember, he's also in the Marvel universe, is very much dead. And Dracula's heir, Zaris, is now the Lord of the Vampires. So, unfortunately for Jubilee, she succumbs to the vampiric will, and Zaris then bites her as a means of luring the rest of the X-Men to him. So she gets infected. She's starting to turn. He bites her to complete the transition. She becomes a full-fledged
vampire. Oh, my gosh.
And so it turns into this all-out battle between vampires and the mutant populace. So as a vampire, Jubilee also inherited superhuman strength, speed, and ability to turn into vapor, and also advanced healing. So there's this entire era of comic books where when you see Jubilee, she's got fangs and she has red eyes. Same look otherwise. Everything, she's wearing the glasses.
That's interesting.
She's wearing red instead of pink, but she has the yellow jacket on. And again, red eyes and fangs. And she wants blood. It's so weird.
I want your blood.
Red Guardian is a vampire.
I want your blood, X-Men. I just turned Russian for a second.
That's so funny. So in the end, Dracula took care of his heir, and he came back as the undead do, and he ripped off Zaris's head.
Nice.
But it would be another 8 years before Jubilee was cured of her vampirism.
Oh my God.
So she was
a vampire for 8 years?
In comics for 8 years. Yeah.
That sounds exhausting.
It's a lot, right? It's so interesting because... You know, a friend of mine even asked me the other day, she was like, why do you think they did that to her? And I was like, I'll be honest, I think it was a sad ploy to kind of make her relevant.
Yeah.
But also tie her into this storyline that they wanted to just have somebody at the helm of, like, who could we turn into a vampire? And they're like, oh, Jubilee, why not? Because they hadn't changed her for so long. So yeah, she was a vampire for 8 years in comic continuity. And she was cured by a shard of the Phoenix Force in 2019. And it also reinstated her general mutant abilities. So, again, she's just a lumikinetic now. She doesn't have all the other stuff anymore. But yeah, so again, no live action counterpart. And you know, if you're listening to this, you should know by now that considering Jubilee's total on-screen time in the films doesn't even make the top 15 characters, let alone the top 30.
Yeah.
It's safe to say that she's never fought anyone on screen, which is pretty much true. Because again, I don't think I've ever seen her in combat on screen. Ever. Ever. Not even in group settings. She's never there. So that sucks. That sucks.
Justice for Jubilee.
Justice for Jubilee. So in other versions and in other media. I wanted to mention one variant by the name of Abscissa, which is one we are familiar with now, because she was voiced by Allison Court,
yes,
aka the OG Jubilee from 1992. And so we did talk about a little bit about Abscissa in our X-Men 97 episodes. So it's pretty much every episode except for two of them in the last 10 episodes. But yeah, Abscissa is very much an alternate version of Jubilee that exists in the Mojoverse, both in the comics and the animated series. However, she does meet her fate in the books. And so thankfully, she more or less thrives in the animated scape, a far more lighthearted take of the character in comparison to her source material. Like, Abscissa in the comics, super dark. You know how in the cartoon she had this cool like headpiece that had spikes and stuff?
Yes.
So in the comics, It's like a man in the mask situation. So they've contained her face in this metal thing, and it has a chain attached to it. And they just drag her around. It's kind of messed up. So anyway, Abscissa, a lot more lighthearted and lives on in X-Men 97. And then speaking of, in animation, naturally, again, we must mention Miss Holly Chow, the wonderful actress who's picked up the role for the series. And I said it again, you know, I find Holly's version of the character incredibly on point, super funny, super witty, bringing a bit of levity to the team that is surprisingly dark despite their colorful exterior. I think we've only just gotten a little bit of Jubilee even then, and she's been in almost every episode. And I can't wait to see what she brings to the table in season two.
I'm excited.
Super excited. And then, other. So this is where we're going to talk a little bit more about Generation X. So again, it was released on February 20th, 1996. And Jubilee...
I was two.
And Jubilee is portrayed by Heather McComb. Oh, my first note. Holy smokes. So, this movie. It was directed by Jack Sholder and written by Eric Blakeney, with executive producers Stan Lee and Avi Arad.
Of course.
Avi Arad has been around for like my entire life in the Marvel Universe, right? Like, which is kind of crazy to think about.
He's been involved in a lot of things, yeah.
So many things. And so this was meant to play, the film itself was meant to play a part in the X-Men franchise spinoff, though it was released prior to the end of X-Men, the animated series, and before the films. So it was like a weird little segue period, right? So X-Men was in its fourth season out of five. They snuck this into it, being like, we'll get them. You know, like, ratings were dying already. Because by five, it petered out.
Oh, it did?
The first four seasons were pretty steady.
Of course.
But there's a whole thing. Look up anything with the Leewalds, and they explain it incredibly well. And even in The Assembled, they mention it there, that they just started to run out of money. They had to bring it to another animation studio, and that's why the quality goes down. Some of the voice actors had to drop off just because it wasn't good for them anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of like Fox's like idea of like, oh, we'll reinvigorate the franchise if we drop this movie. And
studios always think they're doing something.
Yeah, it didn't quite do it. So as the title suggests, it initially started as a pilot, but then later served as a one-shot film with a $4 million production budget.
Yikes.
So when you watch that movie, tell me if you feel $4 million in that, because there's a lot of green screen going on.
That alone is like a quarter of the budget.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially during the 90s.
In 96? Oh, yeah. And then the skin, like again, like skin and his stretching and a little bit of the fireworks and Banshee uses his powers quite a bit. Yeah.
It's 96. When it came to VFX and CGI.
Yeah. Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Yep.
Right? 93 or 4?
94, because it's 35th anniversary now? No, 30th anniversary.
That Terminator 31. Was also like big, right?
Movies that came out in 1996. So compare it to... The Craft, Titanic. Wow, Twister.
Ah, Twister is also a good one.
Fear.
Okay. Name like five more. I'm sure there's a lot of good ones coming out in 90s. I know 94 had some bangers because that's when I was born.
Let's see.
1996.
This is a tough one, actually.
Oh.
Dragonheart.
Wow, there's not much then.
Not much at all, actually.
There's a lot of good movies throughout pre-1996.
But yeah, you compare it to, okay, Aladdin and the King of Thieves, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Pinocchio, the live-action version.
Oh, wow.
James and the Giant Peach.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Kazam, not to be confused with Shazam, that apparently never existed. Do you not know about the Mandela effect?
Shazam?
Apparently the movie with...
Shaq?
No, the other one.
With Sinbad?
Never existed.
Mandela
effect. We're going to talk about it. That's what everybody has said.
We've seen it's played on television.
Mandela effect. I agree with you. Mandela effect says we all made it up.
How do you make up a movie that we've seen?
I promise
you. Like, Mandela effect is like you've been pronouncing something your whole life and you've known something your whole
life. Berenstain Bears.
That's real. What do you mean? The book?
Spelling.
This is a side tangent. How is it supposed to be spelled? How is it supposed to be spelled? I'll tell you how I know how it's spelled.
Okay, tell me how it's spelled.
B-E-R-E-N Stein. S-T-E-I-N.
No.
What is it?
B-E-R-E-N S-T-A-I-N.
There's no A in there.
Berenstain Bears.
What?
Yes, I'm telling you. So you look up Shazam or
Kazam.
Sinbad. Sinbad's movie. It does not exist.
Well, Shazam is Shaq's, right?
Kazam is Shaq's.
Kazam is Shaq's?
Yes. Mandela effect.
Hold on, dude. I'm still on Eastern Standard Time. Hold on.
This would have been blowing your brain to smithereens regardless.
What do you mean?
I know.
What do you mean?
The Mandela effect.
That Sinbad movie exists.
We could be here all day. I agree with you. But the internet and history tells us we made it up.
But you're saying I can't YouTube clips of that movie. I can't find some sort of recording of that movie online right now. Mm-mm. In this day and age of modern internet.
The first YouTube video, Sinbad Shazam movie, never existed. you're gonna have a good time.
Dude, you're gonna make me like rabbit hole this thing.
It's gonna be incredible. The first thing you find is a Reddit. So good luck with that.
I've never dived deep into Reddit, and I don't plan to. Yeah. But
yeah, Kazam, Barbed Wire, The Arrival, and Independence Day were also movies that came out in this era of Generation X. So it's low budget.
I mean, just from the stills that I've seen.
Yeah. I thoroughly love it. But it is kind of, I can imagine at the time it was heralded like, it was looked at like it was supposed to be heralded, but it just wasn't. And then wholly unrelated, but related. So you saw the pictures of Fionnuala Hughes as Emma Frost.
Yes.
Evidently, Sandra Oh auditioned to play the part of Emma Frost in that film.
Nice.
Crazy.
Sandra Oh?
Sandra Oh! That's wild.
It's one of the goats right there.
I know.
It's crazy.
And then this is where your mind's going to be blown, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact. So this is why I was like, I hope he watches this movie. Fun fact is that, so it takes place in an ex-mansion. The entire film takes place in an ex-mansion.
Uh-huh.
The mansion used as a backdrop in this film is a castle called Hatley Castle that really exists. And it is the same Xavier Mansion used in 6 X-Men films, including both Deadpools.
Oh, wow.
So that mansion is literally the mansion that started it all from, like, I think it's X2, 3, Apocalypse, 3 other ones, and then both Deadpools. They filmed in the same house.
That is crazy.
You're going to recognize it a little bit. So, yeah, that's it as far as the Gen X film is. If I haven't convinced you to watch it, you should watch it.
I just want to.
It's fun.
Yeah, I just want to hear the dialogue.
It's so fun. And so, as we move on, Almost Was. So, again, like I mentioned above in our Wolverine section, Rogue was 100% supposed to be Jubilee when it came to the Foxverse. But filmmakers failed to get, because this is the crazy part as to why they did not do it, for the record.
Mm-hmm.
So evidently, filmmakers failed to get Natalie Portman to play Jubilee. So they're like, that's fine. Let's just rewrite it. Maybe she'll do it then. She still said no.
Nice.
And then Anna Paquin got it.
Ah.
So that's how that happened. And it goes without saying, the role has been whitewashed in iterations.
Yes.
And if they'd cast Natalie Portman to
who's
begin with...
Who's not Asian.
Who is very much not Asian. She's as Asian as Emma
but
Stone.
She's as Asian as Scarlett Johansson.
Exactly right. Ooh, there's one I haven't thought about for a while.
I was going to say, they should just cast Scarlett Johansson as Jubilee.
Yeah, oh man. Had that been propositioned in like 2006? Oh man. They would have absolutely... Ghost in the Shell. Holy moly. I never saw
hilarious.
That. I never saw that version. It only would have furthered the damage if they casted anybody that wasn't remotely Asian in the role, especially given the consistent lack of AAPI faces in mainstream media, not only at the time, but in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that if and when they do bring Jubilee in, again, I hope she's Asian proper. I hope she's Chinese American proper. And we get to see an amazing rising star like we have in Simu Liu and many others that have begun to emerge, including Holly Chow.
Yes.
You know? So we'll see. Fingers crossed. So, future of the character in the MCU. Speaking of, what do you think, Jeff?
I think we're going to see more, obviously, in X-Men 97.
You think they're going to pull her in even more? As time goes, or
I think they will animation. At some point. Yeah. I just don't know how big of a role she's gonna have if it's X-Men movies.
Yeah,
like I don't know how big of a maybe like they might cast her properly for sure.
Yeah,
as for big of a role, who knows?
Yeah, I know, and it's kind of surprising because Lana Condor is apparently Vietnamese. I didn't realize that,
mm-hmm.
And then Jamie Chung is also, I believe, she's Korean, and then. The very first woman, I'm not sure which ethnicity she was, but yeah. Here's the question. Do you think they'll bring Jubilee in the minute they introduce the X-Men? Or do you think they'd bring her in further along?
After how well X-Men 97 did,
uh-huh.
And by well, I mean 100% on Rotten Tomatoes,
yes.
You kind of have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and then if you keep putting Wolvie at the forefront, then it's like, okay, no, you obviously do not.
Well, therein lies the issue, right? Oh man!
But also, who's going to be Wolverine in the upcoming X-Men movies?
Right.
Like maybe like, I was like, okay, Hugh did his thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe we put Wolvie on the back burner, much like how X-Men 97 kind of did, which is totally fine.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
You have a Scott Summers led team and you just have all that chaos.
Thank you.
Ensue and just deal with that toxicity.
Exactly.
You know, like I would pay good money to hear just Scott and Jean yell each other's names in times of distress.
Well,
Jean.
Scott.
Cut it out, Dad.
Well, that's why you go to watch the rest of the original series. Every other episode, Jean is fainting, Scott is yelling, and they go, again, they go through the Phoenix Saga proper.
Yeah.
They're the only version of the of anything that isn't the comic books that's actually done it well.
Uh-huh.
And there's so much turmoil. it's quite great.
Yeah.
My concern is that if they do decide, okay, let's not take the approach with Wolverine so much, does that then dilute the chances of getting a Jubilee that's fully immersed in the situation? Or will it be like 97 where she's greatly independent on her own, but of course the two are also still...
I mean, yeah, it is hard to do a live action X-Men movie and then want to include a story arc for each X-Men, you know? So that is the tough part, and it's kind of like, all right, what do you do if you do bring in Jubilee? Like, do you give her some sort of arc, or should we focus on, you know, the team aspect? But you can't have a team aspect without like establishing the characters. So it's like, yeah, you'll maybe have the bigger arcs of Scott and Jean.
Yeah.
But then, and then it trickles down to, you know, maybe Storm and Rogue, you know, and then Professor X and Magneto, you know, and now you're like, oh my God, who are we going to have for that?
All the love spats.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. And so, and then you have to throw in Jubilee in there, and it's like, it's a tough question for the filmmakers, creators, and like studios that like, do we want to, you know, because we, and like, and how long would this movie be? 2.5 hours, 2 hours and 20? Like, that's tough. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like if you're going to do an X-Men movie proper, you have to like include like those core, like whoever you saw in that first episode.
Yeah. 97.
Of 97.
Yeah.
You should include them in the live action.
Yeah. I'll agree with that. Wholeheartedly. Yeah. So we'll see. Any dream casts? I don't have a dream cast whatsoever.
Oh, for?
I looked up. Like
Chinese American, or
yeah,
just
I couldn't even narrow it down to anybody. I don't know at all. I wish I did, but I don't.
It would probably have to be like someone young.
Oh, very,
like
very
either
young,
like 18. They can play like 16 to 20.
Sure, because
maybe even 18 to 22.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they kind of pulled her into Young Avengers, but she wasn't necessarily an Avenger; she was a X-Men.
Yeah,
that just helped.
Yeah.
But so then you look at that playground, right? So you have Kamala Khan and America Chavez and Kate Bishop, kind of Yelena Belova, but not really.
There's this girl I just saw on the movie,
and
the movie Bottoms. Have you heard of that movie?
Yeah.
There's this girl in there, this Asian girl.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like the first Asian girl that came into my mind right now, who's like, I thought maybe. Her name is Havana Liu.
Oh, Havana Rose Liu.
Yes.
Oh, I've seen her in something else, I think, maybe. Oh, she's beautiful.
Yeah.
Huh.
I just thought of that. I was like, what Asian person that like, that is not like mainstream that I already know.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I just saw that movie. And then we're talking about this, what I was thinking about it. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I think. And she's pretty like, she's tough as hell too in the movie. Yeah. So like, I can see it.
That's cool. Oh, I love that. No, she looks like she'd be great. Oh, American Horror Stories. That's where I've seen it. Yeah. No, that would be very cool. But yeah, I definitely think they should amplify somebody that could use that sort of elevation and could really just make it the standard. You know what I mean? Like, they just need to bring more Asian folk into the fold in general. And yeah, it'd be really wonderful, especially for someone like Jubilee.
Yeah, but I do believe that she should get time.
Yeah.
Get screen time for sure.
Ooh, can't wait. Well, fingers crossed. Feige, if you're listening. So, suggested reading. This was pretty easy for me to pull together. So, 2022's Exterminators from Team Leah Williams, Carlos Gomez. My God, that man can draw. Holy crap. And Brian Valenza. So I wanted to show you, before we proceed, I wanted to show you this panel from Exterminators. So it is quite interesting that people, again, look at Jubilee and think 14-year-old, 15-year-old, slushy. She doesn't curse. She's a good girl. But after all of this, she's been in continuity for, again, what, 35 years at this point?
Yeah.
She's a grown-up now. And so what I loved about Exterminators is that the first page of the issue has a warning that the contents are for mature audiences because it depicts killing, blood, language, et cetera. And so one of my favorite panels of Jubilee in this world is from this comic, the first one. And it's her first, I think it's her first panel. And so describing it for the crowd, Jubilee is on a couch. She's only wearing her tank top. She's in her undies and her socks.
My gosh.
And she's texting. Is she texting? Or she's FaceTiming, I think, with Dazzler. And she's like, Des was like, I think she said something like, what are you doing? And Jubilee's like, my best, Allison, okay? My fucking best.
Same.
So good. She's like losing her. She's losing it.
Yeah.
And so this, there. It's such a great comic because, again, it does, it just kind of brings them into, like, if you've ever wanted to see them go ham and just actually, like, there's blood involved.
Yeah.
They kill people in this thing, but bad guys, bad guys, just bad guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they do it unabashedly and very realistically. And so, yeah, it's solely focused on Jubilee, Dazzler, and Boom Boom. Have you heard of Boom Boom?
No.
Boom Boom is funny. She's kind of like a mix of the two of them.
Uh-huh.
And but she's kind of an airhead at the same time.
I love that.
Oh, they're great. It's like a great comic. It's so fun. Uh-huh. It's so underrated. But yes, 2022's Exterminators. Check it out. 1994's Generation X from Team Scott Lobdell, Chris Bachalo, Mark Buckingham, and Steve Buccellato, or Buccellato. And then 1991's Wolverine Volume 2, specifically beginning at issue 40. This is the one that immediately bookends from her first appearance and also the 251, 252 of Uncanny X-Men. This mm-hmm. is when she's venturing off in Asia with Wolverine. And so it's brought by the team Larry Hama, Mark Silvestri, Dan Green, and Glynis Oliver. And then, of course, X-Men Series 2, Uncanny X-Men, and also check out the Phoenix Covenant arc. That's a little bit of multiple titles. And that all said, that's the end of the show.
Jubilee.
So thanks for listening. Next episode. So again, schedules are a little crazy right now.
A little bit.
And we're just scraping the surface of our X-Men overload. But next up, we actually have a mini Marvel.
Woo!
Woo! So we're just going to talk about everything that's happening at the by then. And
hopefully more stuff.
More stuff. And then we'll segue into Deadpool land.
Deadpool and Wolvie.
So any comments, questions, anything you want to bring up, please let us know on social media. And finally, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and a special We Are Groot salute to Katie, Tyler, Eve, Laura, Melanie, Ashley, Sherry, Jenny, Joe, Liz, Andrea, Nats, Ariel, Robin, Chris, Edgar, Ed, and Andrew. Follow us on social at STRKCNTRST. And if you like what you hear, please review, rate, and subscribe.
Woo! Once again, thanks for listening. We will catch y'all in the next one.
See you later, Gators.
Bye.
Bye.
I know a part of you wants to hang here, but that's not living. Living doesn't get cheat codes or extra lives, but it has friends and family, love, loss, and heapings of hope. Life's a total risk, and it's on you.
So Magneto was right.
But he's totally wrong about one thing. Video games rule.